So just reflecting, it's like remembering, observing the here and now. It's this way of reminding oneself. Attention here and now, as simple as that. It's paying attention. But observing, not paying attention from a personal position. A personal and the impersonal. And this is why I encourage you to really, you know, use these first three fetters as a reference point. So you begin to, they're very helpful if you use them properly for observing yourself. Observing the whatever, you know, the emotions you're experiencing or opinions, views, feelings, whatever, the physical body. The assumptions, the attitudes, the ideals that we have, all the identities, so that this kind of artificial self is summed up very clearly in the first three fetters, which are Sakya Ditti, Silabhata Paramasa, Vicikicca. Pali words. Sakya Ditti, of course, is we translated generally in English as personality view. But it's the created sense of a self, it's a separate sense of self. You know, what we identify with the body, or the memories one has, one's cultural background, one's position, one's gender, one's emotional tendencies. Now, all these things, these things are what they are, but Sakya Ditti is this kind of blind assumption that I am these very conditions. You know, I am this body, this is mine, and then I operate. Always, if I operate from Sakya Ditti, what is the result, you know, in terms of here and now? When I'm full of myself, my own views, my feelings, my emotions, and so like mindfulness is being aware of that, when I'm caught up in my own fears or anxieties or desires, opinions, views, ideals, assumptions. What is it like? So then this here and now Pachubana Dhamma approach, observing this sense of me and my feelings and what I think, is like this. So what I'm doing is putting this tendency to see myself in terms of identities, blind kind of assumptions, unquestioned assumptions that I am this physical body. Of course, the society we live in affirms that. You know, we are your Ajahn Sumedho, your this, that, you know, so it's, you know, this on the conventional level, fair enough. But now we're going beyond convention, not just operating from conventional assumptions and attitudes and cultural conditioning, to observing, being the putto, being the observer of conditions as we're experiencing them, because the suffering of the First Noble Truth is all about this mistaken identity. the dukkha, you know, there is suffering. It's because of this illusion that we live in. And so, you know, this is to be investigated. We're not trying to deny self, or it's not see it as something we've got to get rid of, but to recognize, and to recognize the suffering that comes from being blindly, ignorantly attached to the sense of myself as a person, a physical being, a male, abbot, upachaya. It's all suffering. If I'm just blindly attached to any of these identities, there's something always coming unsettling about being somebody. And this is to get behind that, to observe this, because it is a sense of separateness and isolation. Because, you know, just the reality of having a body, physical body, you know, it's very observable that my body is separate from yours. I'm sitting up here on this seat, you're down there on the mat. And so that's the conventional reality, you know, of the way it is. And if I'm identified with my physical body, my position, say I'm a teacher. If I'm identified, I'm here, I'm the teacher teaching you Dhamma. Or I'm the head monk, or whatever, of this monastery. These can be conventions, but as, you know, if we don't see through convention, then we tend to operate from positions. You know, even our life, even when we're, you know, if you never investigate this, even when you're alone in your kuti, you can still see yourself as a teacher and somebody like this. You know, we just get fixed in these conventional identities, never getting beyond them, but always limited by them. Ajahn Chah is always emphasizing the difference between Paramattha Satcha and Samuti Satcha. Like Satcha, of course, Pali word for truth. Paramattha Satcha is ultimate truth, ultimate reality. Samuti Satcha is conventional reality. So you notice we're not just, raising Paramattha Satcha as another kind of personal attainment. So, you know, none of us as personalities are ever going to attain Paramattha Satcha, or ultimate reality, on a personal level. If that delusion's never penetrated, then there's no hope. You're in the samsaric vortex, whirling around, a whirlpool of conditioning. So that's why in this chant that I like so much, the unconditioned, there is the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. That there is an escape from the born, the created, the formed, the conditions, because there is the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned. So like in my own practice over the years, I'm investigating, what is the unborn, uncreated, unformed, unconditioned here and now? Not as some kind of defining it intellectually or trying to think it's something I've got to attain, but recognizing, you know, really seeing the dukkha or the suffering of being stuck into the form, the created, the conditioned. Because that's where, you know, that's where I as a person experience suffering is when I lose it, when I'm not being mindful, and I get caught up into this sense of me, mine, what I think, my position, what I want, my view. The important sense of myself, identifying with the age of the body, with the appearance, with the position I'm in, with the gender of the body, with the cultural conditioning. With the Theravada Buddhism, you know, I can be attached to this perception I'm a Theravadan Buddhist, or I'm from the Thai forest tradition, or things like this. This is, you know, these are perceptions, they're conventions, and the attachment to those positions, even they're very good ones, like I think the Thai forest tradition is very good perception. But attachment to it is one thing, out of ignorance, out of avijja. How many of you conceive yourselves as unenlightened persons right now? How many of you, you don't have to raise your hands. That just to investigate, how many of you really see yourself, you know, as someone who's unenlightened, has to practice in order to become? How many of you see yourself at this time with all kinds of faults, weaknesses, things you don't, you know, you feel ashamed of, that you want to get rid of? And how many of you want to aspire to become something? Want to become enlightened, want to become a teacher, want to become enlightened person? And so this is, you know, I'm pointing directly at Sakyaditti, the sense of, you know, even when you conceive yourself, you know, this is humbling anyway. It's not, you know, I'm not enlightened person. I'm just an ordinary person trying to become enlightened, and I still have all kinds of faults. I can see weaknesses in my character and tendencies, you know, that are unwholesome or obstructions, or I have various emotional habits that I find threatening. It's more dangerous to think of it, I'm perfectly enlightened and I don't need to practice. That's those kind of people, they're hopeless. You can't fight it. But at least, you know, the sense of I'm a hopeless case, or I can't practice very well, or I'm unenlightened. You know, it's this at least, you know, it's you're not boasting, you're assuming that you are somebody who's unenlightened. But actually assuming you're somebody that's enlightened is very much the same thing. It's the exact opposite of the other. And that which is aware, I have to start thinking, you know, I am unenlightened, and I start thinking, and I'm operating. If I operate from that position, you know, that I'm unenlightened person that's trying to become enlightened, that's a creation with words, isn't it? This sense of I, that's an English pronoun. You know, it's a human created perception. I am somebody, I'm a person who is unenlightened. And, you know, just intentionally thinking it and listening, that which is aware of that sequence of words. What's that? You know, this is where we discern, where the discerning ability is necessary. That which listens and that which acts, like the active side, I'm an unenlightened person, and that which is observing it. And this is a subtle shift from operating from the words, the assumption, it's not denying it, we're not saying, you know, not saying there's anything wrong with that assumption, but it is a creation that we can blindly operate from, never questioning it, but operating maybe our whole monastic life, we operate from that basic assumption and never see through it, never see what it is. So with mindfulness, you're actually aware of it. Mindfulness isn't saying, judging it, saying it's wrong or right or true or false. But this is what we mean by discerning, what intuitive awareness, what sati sampajanya is. Aware of your own thinking is like this. Now this is very direct kind of thing to be doing, but I challenge you to, you know, to really observe, listen to yourself, not judge yourself. You know, even when you're in a bad mood or something, you know, it's, you know, whatever, you know, angry, upset, or vain, or hurt, or offended, whatever emotions you're experiencing, it's all practice for us. Observing is like this. Feeling offended is like this. Not getting what I want is like this. Feeling disappointed, disillusioned is like this. And so everything is, you know, can be the path knowledge. If we really recognize the power that is behind this awareness of the object. So I'm an unenlightened person is an object, isn't it? I have to, you know, intentionally think it. Or maybe I just operate, maybe I've never, some of you probably never question that. You just operate from that premise. That's why we all become monks and nuns, isn't it? Because we all think we're unenlightened and we'd like to become enlightened. We all can see ourselves as, you know, how many of you identify strongly with your faults and weaknesses? Well, you think being true and, you know, and being straight and true and not being a phony is my, you know, recounting all your faults and weaknesses, your flaws. So like the ego is this sakya-ditti. This is an illusion that our society operates from. You know, it's part of the way the society is anyway. So it's not, you know, I'm not saying it's blaming you personally, but just pointing to it. We come from a society that operates from this delusion. Now, sakya-ditti is the first fetter. It's very, you know, it takes a while to really, you know, you got to really pursue it, listen to it. You know, don't try to be a saint or just think you're being honest about yourself because you can describe all your weaknesses and faults, or analyze yourself endlessly why you have these fears or irrational moods and things like that because of past experience or abuse in the past, or, you know, we just create this sense of a self. It becomes more and more complicated. So it's, you know, we go on endlessly about trying to, why do I have these kind of anxiety about life because of past experience, because of my mother, father, whatever. This just reinforces this basic delusion of a self. Even though it can be, you know, it's kind of interesting to try to figure yourself out why you are like you are. But at the end of the day, you're still stuck with it. Even if you come up with some very, you know, good analyses of why you have these fears or anger or obsessions. But it's still a self-operating. Whether you feel better about yourself or worse. So it's like observing sakkayaditti is not criticizing it, not making anything more of it, but recognizing it. So in my own practice, like this sense of I am, just these two words, a pronoun and a verb. Thinking it, because it's a thought, isn't it? I have to think I am. I know, you know, when there's no I am and when I'm not thinking it. But if I operate always from this position of I am, unquestionably, then it does. It's always this separative sense of I'm separate from you, I'm this person, you're that person. And then of course, I am is still just a, you know, actually, in reality, it's just a statement of presence, of being, isn't it? Because we are all operating from the particular forms that we have, you know. I'm sitting up here, which is a fact, isn't it? I'm sitting on the high seat, you're sitting on the floor. And so that's a conventional reality. But in terms of Paramattha Satya, we're seeing that is a conventional reality as it's an artificial creation. You know, it's creating something out of ignorance and identity, or it can be just a way of communication on the conventional level. Conventions can be used skillfully with wisdom or stupidly or blindly. So it's very important to discern the difference between a convention, what a convention is, and ultimate reality. Discerning the difference. You know, most people don't discern the difference. They just operate on the conventional level. Unquestionably, you know, the conventional level is the real world to most people. So what, you know, the Buddha is pointing at the escape, the way out of the conventional, just blind attachment and habitual, involvement with a conventional reality. It's not an annihilation of it, it's not a judgment, but it's pointing to, you know, if we just operate on that level, what is the result? That's why we're here, isn't it? Because most of us have been operating from the conventional level and we feel something's wrong, something's missing. Why would we come to a Buddhist monastery anyway? Because the conventional society, we live in a pretty decent conventional society, you know, Britain, it's a very nice country. On a conventional level, we all have our views and opinions and criticisms of it, but basically, you know, on planet Earth, it's good enough. It's a democratic system, and it's, you know, fairly stable government and democracy and all that. So, I mean, it's still unsatisfying, isn't it? At least, you know, most of us are here, not because we want to. We're so involved with the conventional realities. But even when the conventional realities are fairly good, it's still something, you know, there's still dukkha, because we're still operating from ignorance, from avidya. Then Sila Pattabhyamasa, this is quite a mouthful at first when you first hear it. It sounds like funny language. You say, Sakya Ditti Sila Pattabhyamasa Vichikicca. And I know what that must sound like if this is the first time you've heard it. But I mean, these 10 fetters. The first 3 fetters are the obstructions to stream entry, sotapanna. Now these are, you know, there's these 4 stages: sotapanna, sakadakami, anakami, arahant. There are 10 fetters. Now this is a convention to use, not to claim, or, you know, saying you're a stream enterer is sakyaditti again. You know, I'm an arahant, or I'm not an arahant, is sakyaditti. They're not concepts to attain or become as a person at all. So, you know, you see people going to Thailand, and I mean, years ago I remember, before I came to England, you know, you get these people wandering through Thailand looking for arahants. You know, Westerners, you know, trying to figure out who's an arahant and wanting to attain, become a stream enterer. And then there's, you know, the basic delusion. You know, sakyaditti will grasp these perceptions of sotapanna. I am a sotapanna or I'm not a sotapanna. Same thing, whether it's Sakadakami, Anakami, or Arahant, or Messiah, or Maitreya. Say, I'm not Maitreya, or I am Maitreya. I'm the Messiah, or I'm not the Messiah. And so this is, you know, getting into seemingly absurdity. But it is the way the world thinks, isn't it? You know, on a personal level, I've never considered myself a Messiah or a Maitreya Buddha or anything like that. It's just never been a problem for me. On a personal level, I've come from a more skeptical, critical mind. aware of my weaknesses, making a big deal, making a big thing about my faults, the fact that I, on a personal level, I don't live up to my ideals. You know, I'm not the person that I would like to be as a person. But if used properly, like what I'm trying to convey in this reflection this morning, is how to use this form. It's a convention to use, not, and of course the big thing is to break through the illusion of Sakyaditti. So none of us will ever become Sotapannas as persons. Give up that idea. If you think you can attain Sotapanna from the personal position, you can't. And if you do feel you're a Sotapanna, you're obviously deluding yourself. Stream enterer, that's what Sotapanna means. What is stream entry? You know, these three fetters are artificial things created by human beings. They're made by human beings, by culture, by cultural conditioning. It's samuti satya, it's conventional. It's cultural conditioning, isn't it? Ethnic identities, religious identities, all of it is conditioned. So these first three fetters, emphasizing these, because these are the big obstruction. If you can break through that delusion, you know, get through and see through these artifices that we've created. Now, I'm not saying because they're artificial they're good or bad. Their qualities can be good and bad, right and wrong, true and false. You know, so these are all about conditioned phenomena. Sakyaditti, the personality view, ego, the sense of myself as a separate person, me as a physical presence, the age of the body, the gender of the body, the position, is conventional reality. Then that which is aware of conventional reality is, what's that? In order to discern it, I have to let go of identifying with it. And of course, this is what I'm trying to point to, is that trusting in this awareness of what you think you are. You know, to discern the difference so that you're learning how to trust what the ultimate reality and no longer be so totally convinced and operate from the conventional reality. Now this is a seismic shift, a quantum leap, and because you're shifting out of the momentum of habit and conditioning into ultimate reality. And so there is an escape from the born, the created, the form, the condition. That's it, isn't it? Mindfulness is the gate to the deathless. So listening, you know, this sense of listening to the ego, And observing, being the knower. So this relationship of Buddha to Dhamma, you know, these are the refuges again. They use this mantra, Bhutto, Tammo, Sangho. These are conventions too. They're words, but they're not meant to be identities. They're not trying to you know, create them and identify or grasp them. They're merely expedient means to remind ourselves, because we so easily, when we're living in the society that we've been conditioned by, it was so, you know, we tend to easily be taken on by it, you know, just so natural, so easy, just to drift into the sense of oneself. And, you know, we're just so used to it. Even if we've got, if we don't like ourselves, or we're depressed, it's easier to go along feeling sorry for yourself or depressed or upset than to not, to observe it. So this attentiveness is, you know, this paying attention, sati sampajanya, observing. And then in the Pali form, you've got the aramana, is the mental object. The sense of I am enlightened, I am unenlightened. That is, there's an observing of it when I think this thought. I am unenlightened is, I can observe, I'm thinking a thought. The sense of I am somebody who isn't enlightened is like this. It's words. That which is aware of that thinking, that sentence, it has no name, but it's recognizable and it's discernible. And so to really investigate in this way, to, you know, I feel sometimes my sense of despair arises when, you know, and you've been teaching this for years, and people still operate mainly from the Sakyaditti level. There's moments of despair with the Sangha because they had all these years and they're still operating from that. And I think, you know, when you really contemplate what I, you know, my reflections over the years, I'm saying the same thing all the time. You know, nothing new. But it is, you know, just a repetition, and yet your personalities can be your reality. Your mood, your emotions are the real world for you. You know, you operate from that, and then, you know, this is, and then you create the suffering, like Sangha life, monastic life. We can create all kinds of suffering around it if it's taken personally, if it's personal and unquestioned, operating from personal identities, these conventional identities become my identity. But then the despair that I feel is Sakyaditi again, isn't it? Because I want you to understand this. So when you don't seem to, then I... You always have to go back to the here and now as you're experiencing it in the present. You know, and I really want you to see this. You know, I really want you to break out of the realm of dukkha, of suffering. And so, you know, that, and if I attach to that desire, then I suffer too. And Sila Bhatta Paramahansa is like conventional, it's like cultural conditioning, social. These are kind of acquired attitudes from a culture that you're born into, from your parents, the class identities. These are not maybe so personal, but they're more or less assumed. Like nationality, or class positioning, or ethnic identities, racial identities, gender identities, sexual identities. Religious ones. You know, so these are part of, you know, we're all born into particular culture that we, you know, you're a baby, you know, it just absorbs what its parents think and feel. Maybe they don't say directly, but you acquire this sense of your identities with the culture, with the social position. With the ideals or the attitudes that are maybe never made kind of consciously explicit but assumed. And this, of course, really, you know, you can see it in living in like living in Thailand is a very good mirror for a lot of, like, American cultural identities, a lot of assumptions and attitudes that are part of being born into that society because you're in a different kind of culture, very different cultural milieu and attitudes. And so it kind of like mirrors your own sense of being American, which isn't particularly, you know, you can't, it's harder to, more difficult to see when you're living in the States, because everybody has pretty much operates from that identity. The same attitudes, assumptions that Americans have. Like even after 34 years living in the UK, I realize culturally I'm still very American. You know, because, you know, talking to the other Americans, Ajahn, Jayanto, and so forth, we share a cultural identity, assumptions, rather, not a particular stated position, but assumptions that come from being born and growing up and acquiring those attitudes from that being, you know, from that particular, being born into that society. And then you like have, of course, in the States you've got all these racial issues, like the black, the Afro-Americans, have different cultural identities. There's certain ones that we share as Americans, but then, you know, to think that Afro-Americans have the same assumptions that white Americans have, you get it all wrong, you know, because they have different social conditioning or attitude based on color of the skin, race. Now, I'm just pointing, like Sila Bhatta Paramahansa then is this conventional, you know, clinging to conventional reality, clinging to conventions. And so how do we get behind all that? And then the Vichikicca, the third fetter, is doubt, skeptical doubt, uncertainty. And that is, you know, when you contemplate, you end up being caught in doubt, skepticism, when you attach to thinking. Thinking, attachment to thought, to ideas, will always create this sense of doubt, skeptical doubt, uncertainty, insecurity, through attachment to your thinking process. The thinking process is dualistic, you know, so we on that level it's rational, it can be logical, it can be intelligent, like we go to universities, don't we, because we try to gain information and increase our ability to reason and use logic. And the idea of modern life is to be reasonable about things. So I hear that all the time. Let's be reasonable. And you know, reason is something we quite admire, to be reasonable. And just pointing out that these are artificial creations. You're not born with reason. You know, you're not born with any cultural identity or sense of your ego or self. Like a newborn baby isn't born thinking, I'm a little boy or I'm a little girl baby or I'm an English baby, isn't it? That you get when you're growing up, your parents say, you're a little boy, and you're English, and you're middle-class English, or you're working-class English. So these, you see, you acquire that after birth. It's not part of the dhammachat, or natural flow of conditioned phenomena, arising, ceasing. It's created by human beings. And language also. Whether you speak English or German, French, Thai, Sinhalese or whatever. You know, these are acquired. You know, why do we have different languages? Why can't we all speak just one language? Because they're born different parts of the planet in different cultures, different climates, different religious identities, tribal identities, ethnic identities. So that's why in the conditioned phenomena, to discern conditioned phenomena like this, it can be right, wrong, good, bad. It can, you know, dualism is you have one, you have the other. If you have hell and heaven, you have hell. If there's good, there's bad. There's right, there's wrong. And that's the nature of, you know, because things are, you know, on a conventional level, some things are better than others, bigger, smaller, uglier, more beautiful, what's right, what isn't right, what's wrong, what's bad, and all that. So we, you know, and we're caught in this, what we call this dualistic structure of the conditioned realm with no perspective on it. You know, and then our education is all about clinging to views, opinions, ideas, concepts, how things should be. So this is a encourage this identity, you know, seeing this identity, that to discern this, which is aware of what you think you are, of your, you know, of maybe assumptions you have from your cultural conditioning, your education, or the just attachment, blind, helpless, ignorant attachment to your ideas, your views, your opinions, thoughts, thinking process. You know, on a personal level, I like to see myself as a reasonable man. I like to see myself on a personal level as a man who's being reasonable about life. I don't like to see myself as an emotionally kind of overwhelming man who's just totally always caught up in feelings. You know, the ideal for my generation of men in the States was to be reasonable, sensible, realistic, practical, good. Now those are all good concepts, aren't they? We all, you know, think this is what we all aspire to as persons. But then in the realities of living life, you find yourself being irrational, unreasonable, emotional. And seeming so far out from being reasonable and all the good things that you aspire to. Now this is, you know, the conflict, the inner battles between the intellect, the ideal world of the intellect, and the emotional realities we live with. Emotions are like this, they're not reasonable. You can't have reasonable emotions. Sometimes they're totally unreasonable. And, you know, we don't, sometimes we're embarrassed by our emotions and we don't, you know, don't hope you don't see what I'm actually feeling at this moment. You know, so we learn how to perform in society, to look reasonable even when we're in, you know, a basket case. Usually have a mask you can assume in public. So this is like emotions are about feeling, you know, and identity with the feeling. Like if I'm a person, you know, and I want to be treated properly. I want to be, you know, I don't want to be looked down on. I want to be respected on a personal level. I feel I should be respected and treated properly. And, you know, I hope people can, you know, respect me and admire me. I like that. But then when I'm not, when people don't respect me or admire me, or they look down on me, or they insult me, then the emotions are not being reasonable at all. Feel anger, resentment, hurt, offended. Now the awareness of that, isn't it? Being aware of of the immersion. And because awareness can include both the ideal, the reasonable side, and the emotion all at the same moment. It is inclusive, you know, it's not about getting rid of one and holding on to the other. But it's, you know, with mindfulness, it's an inclusive, embracing, intuitive sense of knowing. It's like this, emotions are like this, this feeling of being sad or hurt by things is like this. The feeling of not being respected or appreciated is like this. And then as I feel, if I come from, you know, I'm not being appreciated, I'm not getting the respect that I should get, and then I can, you know, then one can get carried away if one grasps that emotion, then, you know, you can get wound up with it. Blaming people, blaming oneself, blaming the monastic life, blaming the Thai forest tradition, blaming the head monk, blaming the head nun, blaming. This is a very blaming society, by the way, if you may have noticed. Britain, always blaming. So Gordon Brown's being blamed for all kinds of things, and Alistair Darling, blamed. And then David Cameron, he wants to become prime minister so he can be blamed. And we all can get off on blaming him. Everything is wrong with this country because of Gordon Brown. So, I mean, it's, you know, this is the way the society is. So we blame ourselves, we blame others, blame parents. Bhikkhus blame nuns, nuns blame bhikkhus. What is this blame anyway? And so one can be aware when I'm blaming somebody. If I'm not aware, then I just believe. I get caught up into a whole kind of boring scenario of blaming, or observing it. So this is like this mantra of Bhutto reminds me. Sound of silence, referring to that. I stop blaming immediately. And that just stops that the momentum of that emotion. Feeling sorry for myself, just referring to sound of silence, will stop the momentum of that particular emotional pattern. So this, you know, reflection, during this retreat, you know, to encourage you to really, if you really take an interest in these fetters, the first three fetters, it can be quite interesting, in fact. You know, if you're suffering and feeling of offended or resentments or doubts or fears, you know, this is an opportunity. Don't try to just go into a nice tranquil state to avoid it, but, you know, challenge it, really. Get to the root of emotional tendencies, attitudes, assumptions. Not to get rid of them, but to understand this, to see, you know, see them from this position of Bhutto, seeing them in terms of Dhamma, rather than as my real world, myself, my view, my life, which is If we never see that as an object, then we operate always from this divisive separateness of the of the born, the created, the form, the condition.
Page 44, reflection on the four exes. You notice last evening we chanted the reflection after using the four requisites. That's just recently been inserted. Usually we've only done the other one. But in Thailand, for example, we always did the morning one and then the evening one. So this is reminding the four requisites. This is a samana, what we call samana sanya. These four requisites are worldly possessions. In terms of, this tradition, the robe, alms food, shelter, and medicine. Now this is, it's to reflect that this is what a samana life is, these four requisites. And they're just for practical, that you're not for vanity or for envy, but just for basic survival.